I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes and routines they just can't get to work. Sadly, today, producer Joel cannot be with us as he's a busy little bee, flying around, pollinating other podcasts. I don't know what I'm on about. So he's not here, so I'm just going to do one on my own. But I'll keep it nice and brief. Last week, amazing show with Milton Jones. Brilliant. Just loads of great feedback. Lots of people enjoying it. If you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to it. A very good episode for joke geeks. Loads of feedback, but I've got to do this nice and quick and sharp. So the most recent feedback, where is it? Oh, yeah, someone tweeted today. So I was talking to Milton about a joke where I said about I've got weird genitals and I went to the doctor and asked him to check my testicles. First he checked the right and then left and didn't come back. That was the original joke. One of the times I tried it, I forgot where the joke was going. So I just said I've got weird genitals and the audience laughed. So that actually got a bigger laugh than the joke did. So we were chatting about that. And David Hughes says, ashamed to admit that even though the joke landed on me, I still found I've got weird genitals way funnier. So I think that's going to go into my show. I'm just going to tell the audience I've got weird genitals. So if you come and see my show in Edinburgh this year, look forward to that. So thank you again to Milton for coming on, cracking stuff. I just recorded a live podcast with Gary Delaney, which was equally as great joke geeky wise. That doesn't even make sense as a sentence, I don't think. And that'll be out in a couple of weeks. What else? Live shows. I'm doing a live show in London next week, the 5th of December at the Bill Murray Pub. And my guest, at the moment I've got one guest, not sure if I'm going to have two. But at the moment, it's Gareth Richards, brilliant joke writer, Edinburgh Comedy Award newcomer nominee. He's been on Ross Howell's Good News, Frank Skinner's radio show, loads of stuff like that. So he's a great guest. So get your tickets at marksimmons.co.uk or go straight to the Bill Murray Angel Comedy website. Look forward to seeing you there. Sorry, babbling on. Let's crack on. This week, we've got Ed Byrne. Yes. That was what Joel would say. He goes, yes. So Ed Byrne, excellent. I'll just listen back to it. Really good episode. Thank you to Ed for coming on. And he'd just driven, when we recorded it, it was just before one of his tour shows, and he'd just driven back from Leeds, and the poor bloke looked knackered, and he still did the podcast, and you wouldn't even be able to tell. What a nice man. So thanks to Ed. I hope you enjoy it. Hashtag Awooga. So with the tour now, so your tour's locked in now, so all the stuff you're not sort of adding anything now, are you?
I still am.
Oh, do you?
And I'm still touring with a support act at the moment, and that'll be up until the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
I always have the sort of just, it's just like having the sort of training wheels on.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that the audience gets a gets a full show.
Yeah.
I just bring a support act as well. I mean, as it is, my stuff comes to a good hour 20 anyway.
Yeah.
But then you just have a support act doing 25 as well.
Oh, so wow.
Just make sure you just give good value. And then next year, it's just me on my own.
So what's that, 245?
Two sets of 45, yeah.
That's what Rob Beckett did actually with me. I supported him for a little while on his first little bit. And now he's off on his own doing 245s.
Yeah. Yeah, I just find that that's it just works. It works better.
Nice.
And now I've reached a point now where I will occasionally, like, I'll actually, there's a bit that I'll just, there's a sort of 5-10 minute bit that I'll either put in or leave out depending on how the night's going.
Okay, because you're not
just because if I can feel that the audience, it's the energy of the, because the first half is 45 minutes. I do 15 at the top.
Yeah.
And then
You do it that way. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. I just, so you break it up, you know. So I do 15 at the top, then I stick Paul on for 25, and then there's a break, and then I'll do an hour 5.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it can go up to an hour 15. Okay. Sometimes it's about, you know, it's never less than an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
But just if I can feel like the room is too hot, or Friday night, you know yourself, a lot of time audience can just be that bit more tired. If I can feel that, you know, I'm not going to get an hour 15 out of these people, there's certain bits I'll just trim off.
Okay. And are there bits that you're not quite happy with yet? Or
they're just the bits that... Well, that's actually a bit that I love. It's actually one of my favourite bits, but it's just the bit that's probably the most verbose. It's a kind of a nerdy bit. It's about men's rights activists and their backlash against women in action films.
Okay.
About how they hate Star Wars and Captain Marvel and all that.
Yeah.
Because women are beating up men and they feel it's unrealistic, you know, in science fiction.
In Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a whole bit about that and, you know, the Ghostbusters remake and Mad Max Fury Road and all that that anger.
Mm.
And it's one of those, it's the one bit of the show where I really feel like I'm talking about something that I care about and the audience doesn't give a shit about.
It's quite niche, I suppose.
Exactly.
I mean, Star Wars is quite broad, but still some people don't know.
Yeah, but the MRA backlash against it is not something that's on most people's
minds.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't.
You know, you walk the streets of Bedworth and ask people if they're bothered by it and they're really not. So you just get to the bit and you go, I think I'll just skip on to the next bit.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Have you got any bits from this year's tour that you just couldn't get to work that you liked?
I had a joke that I thought was funny, which again was quite a nerdy thing, which was, here's my impression of a scriptwriter on a Marvel show on Netflix. Here's those 7 scripts you asked for. Oh no, we asked for 10 scripts. Oh, give me an hour. It was just the point is that those shows are underwritten, essentially. But a lot of people, again, just not that aware of that. So that was one of the, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a joke that worked exactly half the time.
Are you really into that stuff, like Marvel and science fiction and stuff?
A bit. I'm not massively. Like, I do have a joke about it in the show about the fact that my kids are really obsessed with it, even though they haven't seen any of the films because they're too young to watch the films.
So it's the toys, is it?
But they know who everyone is and what the special powers are, and they're right across the whole thing, but they haven't seen any of the films. They're the complete opposite of me. I watch the films, but in the wrong order, don't know who the fuck anyone is. I find myself, I kept doing that thing of watching them, but having missed one, you know. Yeah. Like, I went to see Avengers Age of Ultron, having not seen Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was going,
but it's like, how do you know? Like,
or Winter Soldier.
That's the point.
The Winter Soldier, Civil War, whichever one it was that I should have seen, it was key.
But like in the old days, you get number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4. So you know what you're seeing and what you haven't and what order.
I knew what order they were going, and I knew that I'd missed the show before. But right. I just didn't realise that the Captain America films had become such keystone plot-wise in the Avengers overall.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a while to watch the Captain America one because I thought, who cares about Captain America?
And then it's only now, me and my wife are watching them all in order.
Yeah.
And I'm going, oh, that's right. Oh, that's Bucky. That's right. You know, like, a lot of the, I mean, I know they're not strong in emotional content, but I go, oh, that's why he was so defensive of the Winter Soldier, because that's the bloke from the first film, which I just completely forgot.
You're almost watching Marvel like Star Wars. You're watching the middle ones first,
yeah,
and then going back and watching the first ones.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So, yeah, so that just didn't hit, really.
Yeah, just it was an odd one. But most of it, as it's written, this one has taken me less time to write. Although I started writing it much earlier. I started going down to the open mic nights.
Where do you go?
This time last year, like November last year, I started going down, you know, to get ready for Edinburgh in August. So
where do you go?
I go to Old Rope.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And I normally go to the King's Head. I didn't really go to the King's Head this time around.
You know, I haven't done King's Head for ages, but I've just moved near Crouch End, so I messaged Peter earlier just to go and try some bits. But I'm quite... That was where I did my first gig, downstairs at King's Head.
Yeah, one of my earliest gigs.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of just booked myself in for a trolley load of previews and just got to Edinburgh Fringe with a really solid show. And this is the first time I got one. I know I shouldn't care about these things, especially not at my age and just standing in the community. But this is the first time that I made the list of the British Comedy Guide top 20 most well-reviewed shows at the Fringe. I've never made that list before. If they'd been doing that list back in the 90s when I was, you know, in me early, you know, had that new comedian smell and you could attract that extra star or two, even, you know, because you were new, I would have gotten in back then, but not since then.
So it means even more now.
Yeah.
That's great.
I don't think anyone's doing me any favors when they're giving me a 4 or 5 star.
Do you think that is the starting early? Just starting early and having more time?
Yeah, that's part
of it. Or do you think...
And it's weird because some of the biggest laughs in the show are jokes I really hesitated to put in. Things that happened at home, things that my wife said or my kids said or something like that, that I just thought, I mean, I thought it was hilarious, but an audience aren't going to think it's funny. And in like one of the sort of early on workshopping gigs, it was going, oh, fuck it, I'll try it, I'll toss it in. And it'd be the biggest laugh.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of tales about, you know, I didn't want the show to be too kids say the funniest things.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to get the angle of how to say those bits, I suppose.
It's twee and it just feels like, well, you didn't even write that joke. You're just reporting on something your kid said. But they both got such big laughs. So I now have to pay the kids £1 a gig. Each of them has got a joke in the show.
So do they know that? How old are they?
They're 7 and 8. They can't watch the shows.
No.
But at first I gave them 20 quid each and that was it. And then my wife stepped in as their agent. Going, no, you should haggle for more than that. You shouldn't be getting a buyout. You should be getting a pay-per-play. You should be getting PRS on this joke.
She should be your agent.
Yeah. So then I come home and give them their between £4 and £6 per week, depending on how many gigs I did that week.
Oh, that's brilliant. Do you think that's a lot to do with the truth? The fact that it's something that actually, like, because with your stuff, is anything just made up? Because with my stuff, I do one-liner, so most of it is pretty made up. But is your stuff always kind of...
Mine's generally really, I try and base it in the truth as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
That's a sort of a deal I made myself about 10 years ago, maybe more. Where I just decided I wouldn't. Like back in the 90s, I would just do anything that would get a laugh. I remember distinctly I had a routine about hating kids and just doing the whole thing about and how evil kids are and talking about kids pulling their wings off flies and all that. And I never hated kids. I used to work as a babysitter when I was a teenager.
Right.
I'm one of those suckers for a baby, you know. If I'm at a party and there's kids there, I would more likely play with them than talk to the adults.
Mm.
But it was just always...
But hating kids is a funnier angle.
Hating kids is a funny angle.
Yeah.
And I just wouldn't do that now. I would find some way to...
Do you think the audience could tell then? Or
I don't think...
Not really.
I don't really. I mean, we're talking about playing clubs. And that's the other big thing. There's the difference between being a club comic and a touring comic. And the luxury I think you have as a touring comic is that audiences will kind of go a little bit further with you on a subject because they might actually care what you think.
Right.
When you're just another person getting up at a comedy club, you're just another one on the conveyor belt. They don't give a fuck what you think.
Yeah.
Just want jokes, mate.
Just needs to be tight as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't really think about it to the same extent.
Do you find that weird to go back into clubs then? Or because you're known now, does that help?
Being known does help.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. I mean, it buys you, only buys you time. People, if you get up there and then your jokes aren't funny, you know, if your Netflix joke isn't flying, you got to cut it. No one's going to give you anything for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you think, so, because you've written a lot of shows now, with the writing, do you think, from the, like, thinking of an idea and then trying it, is your hit rate better than it used to be? Have you got better every year with that sort of thing? Or does it still take a while?
But it's still startling how difficult it is to predict.
Yeah.
And you'll know yourself when you have conversations with comedians who've known it, you know, for years. And you'll go, yeah, I'm thinking of doing this. And you'll tell them the joke and they'll nod and go, yeah, let me know if that works. Because you can't tell.
Yeah.
You cannot tell until you get up in front of an audience and try it.
Yeah.
Whether the joke will work or not.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's not the punchline that gets the laugh. Sometimes it's the setup that gets the laugh and you end up even dropping the punchline and just making the thing as an observation. I did have it. There was a bit now. I wish I could think of it that I thought was funny. I tried two or three times and it just didn't. It just didn't fly.
You've got the classic notes in your phone.
I've gotten the notes on my phone. That's also, this has made a massive difference, is having a phone.
Yeah.
It's having the ability to make, because so often you'll go, I'll remember that, and then you don't. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I really, looking at it now, it really wasn't funny. But I was trying to, it was to do with high definition TV.
Right.
And the fact that I'm always having to check settings. You know, the way sometimes it looks like a Spanish soap opera or, you know.
Yeah.
It's all to do with refreshment rate. There's so many other settings that you've got to change.
Right,
to make sure that you're right. And if anything, all this extra definition is actually making me less certain. So it was a pun on the word definition, you see.
Yeah.
It didn't work. No. Just didn't work. Yeah.
I had one when I wrote it, I thought it's gold and it gets nothing.
Yeah.
And I think maybe they see it. It's someone said to me, between Manchester and London, what's your favourite city? I said Birmingham.
Right.
Right. Okay. And I thought, well, that's just a good joke. Mm. Doesn't work. And I don't know whether they just think straight away.
He means somewhere on the way from one to the other.
Yeah.
As opposed to picking the...
Because you could change it to... someone said to me...
You can imagine an audience maybe going, oh, he meant that. Sorry,
it's not funny, is it? That's the thing. That's the thing.
Like, they don't think that it's been a lead away. They think just made a misunderstanding. Yeah. They've just made a mistake.
The reveal just isn't big enough, I think, to get a pop. Because it's not funny. It's just it's just clever wordplay if they buy into it.
Yeah. I have another one that I did think would work that didn't, which was to do with a friend of mine who'd messed up. You know, he'd been caught, been unfaithful, so his relationship took a hit.
Yeah.
But now his wife tracks him in all kinds of different ways. Like, she got like the Tile app on her phone, knows where his keys are. And the car, the on-call thing, so she knows where the car is. And to do the Find My iPhone thing, so she knows where his phone is. She knows where he is, all his stuff is at all the time. And he told me about it, and I'm like, wow, your wife knows how to work all that? Mine doesn't understand the thermostat, which just didn't work. And I'm not sure if it wasn't enough of a, again, not enough of a lead away, not unexpected enough, or if it just sounds too sexist. But my wife genuinely... isn't technical. It's all there is. I mean, she's a very intelligent woman in a lot of ways, but she just, as far as I was concerned, I'm just making a joke about my wife, but I think it might just come across like I'm having a go,
her
indoors.
Because the thing is, like, because I don't think, I don't think that is a thing with women and technology. It's like, it's an age thing, isn't it? So for me, if I was doing that, it would be my mum was tracking me, and I'm surprised she knows how, because she's older and she doesn't know how to use that sort of stuff. But I didn't know they could do that. When you were saying that, I was thinking, no, she'd just do it at his house then. So she'll see it's at his house, won't know he's with him.
I had to tell my wife once. I said, are you aware that I know where the car is? Because I feel like it's intrusive that I... We've got a Volvo on call, as it's called. And so just know. Mm. And I just felt I should just let her know. I don't want you to think that I've set it up.
She suddenly found out then. You hadn't said to her, but...
No, I said it to her out of nowhere. I just said, I just want you to know that I know where your car is.
At all times.
Because I'm following you.
That's brilliant. So that stuff, that was when you were doing old rope and stuff. Like, that was when you were working all these.
It is a great thing. I think that's been a major difference. I know if any aspect of technology has changed my life, because I'm very undisciplined and I will lie in bed and I'll have an idea and I'll go, I must remember that tomorrow, and then I don't.
Yeah.
And even if you keep a notepad by the bed, the fact that you have to get up and you have to... In fact, you have to turn on the lights.
Yes.
And disturb your partner. But my also is an issue.
My girlfriend still gets annoyed with the phone because the light comes on the phone.
I know, but you can't get away with that.
But I find driving...
It's not fair.
What do you do when you come up with... Oh, do you drive?
I do drive, yeah.
So what... Because I find that hard when I come up with an idea when
I
drive.
You come up with ideas while you're driving.
Yeah, and then I'm like... I just have to keep going over the idea constantly until I get a services.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I don't forget it. The amount of times I've lost... Well, I say gold, probably wasn't, but
Come up with it when I'm running. I'll come up with a few when I'm running because that's, you know, your mind will wander a bit.
Yeah. I find after a gig, the adrenaline, but I guess the running thing is the same sort of thing. The adrenaline, when I'm driving home, I tend to come up with ideas more. I think that might be what it is, your heightened senses.
I don't really. I have to say, when I'm driving, it's not a time when stuff comes to me.
No.
Maybe it's because I'm concentrating on driving there are other people's lives at stake.
Edit this out, Joel. edit this out. Making me look bad. So how many times would you try an idea? Like, sometimes you just go, nah, that was stupid to even think that was funny.
Or sometimes, sometimes I will just try it once and it just will not fly. Mm. And sometimes I'll give it the three times.
Three times, okay, yeah.
But, sometimes it can, it's, do you know what? I had a joke and it was working great. And then I took it to the fringe and it stopped working and I couldn't figure out why.
I
went back to a recording of a gig I had done to just check it. And it was the wording and I changed the wording and it worked again.
By accident?
It was just one of those things. In my head, it didn't make any difference, but for some reason it was...
Can you remember what it was?
Yeah. It's a joke in this show about... It's a thing about skills that have come with age and the little things in life, the small victories in life.
Yeah.
And for instance, the fact that I'm very happy that at 47, I've finally been able to... I've developed a skill where I can recognise when a cramp is going to happen and stop it before it does. You know, and then there's a whole mime of jumping out of bed going, not today, motherfucker! And it just stopped working. And the difference was I stopped using the word recognise.
Oh.
I just changed it to... I've developed the skill of being able to tell when a cramp is going to happen and stopping it before it does. And it just stopped working.
Wow, that's cool.
It was really weird that slight change in wording.
Recognize is a funnier...
I guess.
Because I don't know why that is, but it does
sound
funnier.
It sounds more sleuthy, maybe. It sounds more technical. It sounds...
It's like you're making a bigger deal out of something that isn't.
Yes.
Maybe.
I think that might be it.
Yeah, oh, that's really cool. I find that stuff fascinating.
Yeah, the thing that always gets me is how just a tiny change of word will make all the difference.
Yeah, this is why I don't ever throw jokes away, because this last Edinburgh show I did was pretty much a lot of old ideas when I wasn't very good at writing, and that just didn't work, but I knew there was a funny idea there, and then I've just gone back to it, and literally a word or two words, or move it around a little bit. It's like that... Birmingham one, that might work. So one day I might just look at it and go, oh no, what's an idiot, just change that to that. And suddenly it's funnier. But that's great. It's good that you record that stuff.
Yeah, well, I don't normally record, but I do record, you know, gigs when I'm...
Yeah.
When I'm in that you know, writing process.
That's not what I was expecting, because when you said you went to Edinburgh and it stopped working, I assumed it was a topic thing.
The
Edinburgh crowds just were like, oh no. Whereas a club, because sometimes you find, like ruder stuff I find is flying in the clubs, and then when I go to Edinburgh, it's like, oh, that's no longer the best bit.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, it's quite hard to... I still do it, but I just change the order a bit, so I'm not relying on it.
Yeah. It's funny, and I remember one thing I get every year at the Edinburgh Fringe, literally every show I do, because every show I do, I always put in a bit in the show that's sort of, if not party political or current affairs, but it's an issue that I have a personal...
Yeah.
Is a bugbear, or something I want to talk about, something I want to get off my chest. And it'll always be like the most challenging part of the show is trying to make a subject funny.
Yes.
So, last show was, I had a whole thing about Trump and Pizzagate, and this show is this thing about MRAs and their hatred of women on screen and all that. And I always put just a bit in, just a bit, and almost to just for my own benefit, and kind of almost just to have a different flavor in the show, as well as just the crowd pleasing stuff, just something a bit more cerebral. And every year, without fail, a reviewer will say, you know, I really wish Ed would consider doing more of this kind of thing.
Oh, really?
You know, I really think he should do, I think he should, and I go, dude, I've considered it.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for 26 years. I always put that much of that kind of thing in the show.
Because you know.
Because I know how much of that kind of thing I want in the show and how much my audience want.
Yeah.
And I remember as well thinking this time, reading a review, and the guy said, but of course, as the show develops, and as he takes it on tour, no doubt this political stuff will expand. I'm like, no, mate, no, complete opposite. Complete opposite. If anything, the political stuff will get dropped depending on what town I'm in, what night of the week it is.
There should be a feature in reviews where you can put your reply. I think that would make it, people would read reviews more if that was the case.
Yeah,
I think that'd be really good.
I really must take issue with this. I'm glad you like the show, but I'm afraid you are mistaken in your assumptions about my writing procedures.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, because that, you know, that pacing wise, that if you have too much of that, you can sense it's too much. Do you know what I mean? So why is it?
But I also know what people, you know, who comes to see me and why.
Yeah,
and it, you know, it is fairly crowd pleasing, and it's, even the stuff I'm doing, I know what bits are going to work better. I know which bits are going to get round of applause and which bits are going to get big laughs, and you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really do enjoy it when the more political bit gets a big response. Mm. But I also can just feel it sometimes going, I'm going to cut and run on this tonight because I just know they're not going to give a shit.
You can just sense it. Well, you've been going a long time now. I guess that's a sixth sense now, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
To, you know, but that's a good thing because sometimes I've got some ruder bits I do at the end and I can tell an audience that isn't gonna buy into it.
Yeah.
I do a bit now where I lead into the ruder bits by sort of telling the audience, some audiences are a bit, these days are a little bit sensitive, but not, you're probably not like that. Like, is it that sort of thing? And then that bit flies better. But I find, do you find that these days that edgier stuff, like have you got rid of any edgy stuff because it's a bit much? Would you not really do that sort of stuff in?
Not massively. I mean, I am very aware that I still swear a fair old bit, but I'm probably not as inclined to go filthy as I was. But no, they'll generally go with you on it. In fact, some of the biggest laughs in the show are the more filthy lines.
Yeah,
in fairness.
But I guess they trust you because they're coming out to see you. They know you. They've seen you on TV a lot. But I think I can't do anything like that in my stuff until I'm probably about 16, 17 minutes in because they don't know who I am.
So, first.
Yeah, because if you go straight off the bat and do something a little bit, they don't know who I am. But hopefully they've sort of warmed to me by then and then sort of.
Well, I think that goes for any kind of comedy that you want to do is that once you've established yourself with an audience, you can then take them somewhere where you can't just come straight out the gate and go, this is who I am and this is what we're doing. Oh, no, we weren't ready for that.
But the
other thing I'm very gratifying with this show is that three of the biggest laughs in the show are jokes that I didn't even do at the Fringe.
They've all
arrived into the show while I've been on tour.
That's all nice.
Jokes that have come.
Do you like that? Keeping it fresh by adding bits.
Yeah. I mean, really, I should have the discipline to, if I think of something funny now, at this stage, in the I'm just banking it for the next show.
Yeah, yeah.
This show is funny enough now.
But it's hard, though, because when you know it's a funny idea, you want to say it to an audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm the same. I always add stuff when I'm in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just there. And I could die tomorrow, and then no one's
and
heard
I never
that
got
joke.
To tell that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
is that weird?
Yeah,
I don't think of it.
I don't think of it. That's a bit quite so morbidly.
I don't know if I do. That has crossed my mind before.
But I really should. I should have the discipline of going, the show is funny. Any new jokes I think of now, keep them to the next show. Instead, anything goes in, even if it's the last day of the tour, and I'll put it in and go, fuck, where was that joke the whole time? And then the next tour, you start writing from scratch.
Yeah.
You came up with 10 good jokes in the last year that you could have had now. You could have built your next tour around those 10 jokes.
Yeah, but you still could, I guess. Like, it depends where you're last. Right, what you should do is
you start having to look through your dates and then go, right, I didn't tell it then. I hadn't written it till then, so I can still use that now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You hands-free, don't have a normal mic now.
Oh, yes, I have gone for the, yes, the radio mic, the face mic
on this tour. I used it once. Do you know The Noise Next Door?
Yes, guys. Yeah, of course.
I did their lock-in show where you do a bit of stand-up and then you could do a few improv games with them. And they gave me one of those and I bloody loved it. I really liked it.
Again, when I was writing this show, there was a lot more physical comedy in it. There was a lot more stuff that I needed both hands to do.
Okay.
I just started doing a few mimes, and I found that having a mic in my hand was, what's the word? Constraining.
Yeah.
So I opted for the radio. I do now and again. I did the different class tour. I had a radio mic.
I just felt more relaxed, I think. It's just quite nice, just sort of. It's weird to start with.
Yeah.
But then I thought, I could do it.
You feel naked slightly, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like you do? At first it's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Because I like also, even though I never have it, I like having a stand to play with.
Mm.
And particularly to sort of pick up and bang off the stage as a way to intensify a punchline. You know, to show how angry I am about this trivial thing that I really don't give a shit about. You know, that being able to bang a microphone stand and... Having a mic in your hand also just, there's something about it, just it says stand-up comic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It just you can tell by looking at a photograph of somebody, even if you didn't know who they were, you can tell by that pose with mic in hand, other hand on mic stand, that's comedian.
Yeah.
That's somebody doing comedy, that's what that is. Whereas the face mic just has a real TED Talk look about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose. I guess you can't really bring a mic stand on when you've got just the head mic on.
No, it looks really weird. People are very distracted when you do that.
That could be your gimmick.
Yeah.
That could be your thing, your new thing. No, you don't look convinced.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I think not since Freddie Mercury has there really been a microphone stand gimmick.
I'm having it. That's mine this year.
Do it.
My Edinburgh show. Yeah, I did think about, like, I thought, could I get one of those head ones for Edinburgh? And I thought, I'm going to look like a bit of a... Like, I don't know. I think as an unknown comic, I've never seen an unknown comic use one.
Really?
Not really, I don't think. I think I've only ever seen it in DVDs and things, really. It's the physical comics, isn't it, use them?
Because I thought it was a weird choice when Ricky Gervais, when he, you know...
Oh, yeah.
I think he did it at a lectern as well, didn't he, when he first started?
He did.
A lectern. But he's always gone face mic.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was a... Because he's not physical.
No.
And I
I've never seen him with a microphone. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him with a microphone. Mm. Yeah, that is interesting. Stuart Francis uses a head mic as well, I think. But he's the only other one. But I quite like it with him because he's so relaxed in the way with his arms. He's quite...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's disarming, yes. I think.
Mm.
So cool. I suppose. Yeah. Any other, so? Is there any bit over the years that you've just clutched onto and gone back to year after year, ever, like that you just think one day that's gonna
or a joke? You mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, but what is nice is now and again I will do a joke that I used to do when I did open mic,
okay.
And I'm still doing it occasionally today.
Oh wow!
If I'm playing in a town where I'll be back again later in the tour, like tonight, for instance, and last night, is I will, at the start of the encore, I'll say, as I said to the woman I lost my virginity to, if you enjoyed me tonight, be sure and tell all your friends about me. And that's a line I used to do, seriously, as an open micer, you know, after five, you know, I'd do me 5 minutes blot, and that was me closer. And I've started doing it again.
Oh, that's great.
And I find it really gratifying that it still works.
Yeah.
It gets a laugh, you know.
Wow, it shows you always had it, mate. You always had it.
Yeah. And there's a couple of brilliant jokes I find it very hard to let go of. There's one that's not even mine. It's just an old sort of, it's an old, almost an end of the pier one, which was every time I introduce my support act, I go, I'm going to bring on my support act now. He's a bit nervous, but he's got every right to be because he's shit, which is just, it's just a lovely little one and I can't let go of it. And I've got, when I talk about my kids, there's one I've been doing about like my son Cosmo. This is a third tour in a row where I say, so I've got a son called Cosmo. That's right, Cosmo. Awesome name. No, fuck you. You're a showbiz wanker. And it's just such a short joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost like a reflex every time I mention the kid's name. I have to.
It's a nice
scene,
isn't it? It's a nice scene.
Yeah. And it's no one's going to come away from a 2-hour show and go, oh, I heard one of those lines before.
You know, half of people would like to hear some again. Do you know what I mean? Some people do like hearing jokes again.
Hmm. Yeah, not enough to get away with it, though.
not a fool. I had one that I went back to that was one I had on when I started. And I tried it again, but it doesn't work because I think the technology's changed. So it was, I was on my phone on Facebook. I clicked on my photos and it came up saying, no, sorry. I clicked on my album and it came up. It said fetching photos. I thought, oh, thanks very much.
Yeah, that's nice.
Which, yeah, but I don't think that happens anymore. I think in those days, maybe it took longer to load.
So, right, yeah.
And also, I think it might have been a BlackBerry I was using then.
Right.
And like, I don't know if they exist anymore, do they? BlackBerrys? Do people still use them?
The company does, but yeah, I think of sorts. But yeah, that's going to be a...
But it's such a lovely... The fetching, it's just like, it was just a nice, really nice joke. I saw it on my old notepad. I thought, oh, I really like that wordplay, but I don't see. I was thinking, is anything out?
It can be hard to let go of a joke that works, and it is funny sometimes when you watch comedians as they get older adapting a joke. One comic, I won't say his name, but he used to do a routine about meeting your girlfriend's dad.
Okay.
And he still does the routine now, but about meeting his daughter's boyfriend. And he's just switched the roles in the material.
Oh, that's
and
great.
You go, at what point do you go, right, I can't keep doing this. I need to change it.
Do you see that? You probably see that. It's on the circuit quite a lot because when you're doing tours, you have to turn the stuff over so much, but you don't have to.
No, on the circuit, you can just keep doing your greatest hits. So, and why not? Mm. But it is interesting when you have to just make those... Yeah. Those changes.
When you do things like corporates, do you go back to like an old sort of bulletproof?
On corporates, I am. And I find corporates very, I still find them very stressful.
I haven't done many.
I don't, I'm in a bad mood all day because if I die, that's where it's going to happen.
Yes.
And I would say my strike rate at corporates is about 1 in 20. You know, about 1 in 20, I'll have a gig where I'll come off stage feeling like,
yeah, yeah.
I didn't enjoy that. I don't know.
Okay,
about
so that's quite a good.
It's not bad.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You know what I mean?
But it's always that chance.
But there's always that possibility that you're at the very least going to feel horrible while you're on stage.
Yeah.
And there's always that thing of you're slightly hampered. You're just slightly. You don't have the free reign you would at a club or at your own show. Like if somebody heckles, it's the worst.
Yeah.
Because you can't just unload on them in the way that you can. Especially you get heckled by somebody and half the audience probably know him. And you're the only one who doesn't. So you can't use anything. You ask him, so what do you do? And then he tells you something and everybody laughs because that's not what he really does. And you're not in it. And I just feel constantly like I'm on the back foot when I'm doing them.
Especially if you're having a tough one and then they heckle. That's the when you can't do any. Because if they're on your side, you might have a bit of a chance. But yeah.
Having said that, I've done a lot of corporates where you come off stage, you go, God, what was I so worried about? You know, people. And everybody laughed. And it was great. And I've done a few where they've been like a comedy club. It's been awesome, you know.
Okay, yeah.
So it's not all bad. The funniest one, I was just tweeting about this today. Every now and again, you'll get one where the organizer will give you a joke to do. And you always think, oh, fuck off, mate. But I did one for Coors.
Okay.
And the beer company. And he said, no, because if you say this, say that you found this when you were in a shop today, honestly, because of the thing we've been doing in training today, it'll really work.
It's a lot of trust.
If you say so, and I had no fucking faith in it, yeah. But I did it, and it absolutely killed.
Oh, really?
It destroyed.
And now he's your head writer.
And I look like a comedy god, and I had to. I couldn't take the credit. I just couldn't. I said, well, guys, I'm glad you found that funny, because he just told me to say that, and I haven't a fucking clue what that's about. You know, but... It's normally when people give you something like that and you do it.
Yeah.
You know, they give, oh, if you say this about this guy, it'll really work. And then it turns out the guy's not even in the fucking room. And,
right.
And only two tables would have got it. And, you know.
Oh, Christ. I imagine that the worst thing about corporates if you die is if you've got to hand out prizes after.
Yeah.
I haven't had to do those before.
I actually had a story in the show, I think three tours ago, about dying at a corporate. I mean, only half the audience even spoke English as a first language.
Oh,
so that was part of the uphill struggle. And I just went, this is, you know, I did five, 10 minutes, eight. I think I did 8 minutes.
Yeah.
This is just pointless. And I just went. And I was happy to just, and then the guy went, okay, well, fair enough, but you've got to do the charity auction still.
No. Ah, cool. Well, you've got a show to do, so I guess we should wrap it up.
Yeah. I feel bad that we've finished on me telling a story about me dying. I feel like
we can edit it, so that's first.
Well, open with it, yeah.
Have you got any others that you can think of off the top of your head? Like bits and pieces?
Have I got what?
Any other jokes or anything that you thought that you had trouble with or just off the top of your head, or we can just...
Well, you know, there was another one, and I've talked about this one before. There was a joke that I thought was funny. It was to do with the Sugar Babes. And it was to do with that whole thing of, you know, Theseus's ship or Trigger's broom, you know, that thing of when you replace... Theseus's ship is a legend.
Okay.
Where if you replace... He replaced all the wood in his ship.
Oh, right.
So is it still the same ship?
Oh, so it's like the old...
And Trigger's broom is another from Only Fools and Horses. It's had three different handles and two different
heads. So
it's
the ship, one an old one. It's an old
Theseus'
thing.
Ship is literally, yeah.
It's like
Greek.
Oh, so that's where the joke came
mythology,
from?
Mythology, yeah. That's where the analogy comes from. The concept of whether or not an inanimate object has a spirit.
Okay.
And at what point is it still the same thing? And I was applying it to the Sugar Babes. And I, but then I did the joke. I was like, because if you've got a sweeping brush, and you change the head of it, and then you change the handle because it's gotten rotten, and then the head falls off, and you change the head again, then you'll probably wish you saved the money you earned while you were still a member of the Sugar Babes. I thought it was a really good joke. Never worked. It never worked. And it didn't seem to matter how I did it.
Do you think I didn't make the jump to the...
I would either explain it first. I would either... Like, I'd mention Theseus' ship and the Sugar Babes.
Just like you did then.
Yeah. And then do the thing. And I've had other people say, oh, you know, people have heard it.
That's the
thing about the sweeping brush. People already know that joke because it's Only Fools and Horses. And they go, no, it relies on people already knowing the joke.
Yeah,
it's not
that
people have heard
it.
The joke. Everyone has to know that joke in order to get my joke.
So do you think they're thinking too much about that and not focusing on the actual joke?
Or maybe people don't know that joke and think I'm going to give more of it. I really don't. My point is that I always thought it was a funny joke.
I think it's really funny.
It's one of those jokes that I have discussed, because I went on a tour with Matt Hardy and Nick Doody as a warm-up tour before going on proper tour, which was a writing exercise. So the three of us got under the hood of that joke for weeks and tried to make it work. And it became a running joke on the tour that this joke didn't fucking work.
So what other versions did you try, or theories?
I tried not mentioning the Sugar Babes at all until the punchline. Yeah. I tried... explaining Trigger's broom first. I tried mentioning Trigger's broom.
Yeah.
You know, I just every you know, to the point where I went, fuck it, I just can't be bothered.
Isn't that so weird? Because that is funny. That it is. Yeah. It's a funny, no doubt that's a funny idea. Would it get sort of a bit or just next to nothing?
No, nothing.
Fucking hell.
Pretty sure nothing.
And maybe
it's one of the things where I lost so much confidence in it by the end
that
I was saying the punchline wrong, or something. I was just saying the punchline and probably think you should save your money when you were the Sugar Babes. You know, it could have been that. It could have been just the audience could sense that I didn't think it was going to work. Who knows?
It's
just become the joke that never was.
Wow, but I think that's a perfect one to end on. That's great. That's a really good. Yeah, I love that joke, but. Interesting. You'll be doing it in 10 years and you're just... I think Sugar Babes will be a distant memory by then, won't they?
Oh, well, they're back now. So,
oh, are they?
Yeah.
I think you can't bring it back.
Anyway, it makes it current now.
Yeah.
But no, because then it won't work anymore because now they're back. They are earning money, so they don't need to keep rebuilding their brooms.
And then you have to say, you know, but the second ones... The... Ed Byrne! Yes! Yes, there's Ed Byrne. I hope you enjoyed it. I bloody enjoyed it. Brilliant. Thanks for tuning in. If you like the podcast, please go over to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. That's very helpful. And if you like the podcast, please share it on social media. That goes a long way. It'd be really useful. Thanks so much for listening and tuning in. If you want to see a live episode of this with Gareth Richard... 5th of December, Bill Murray Pub. Tickets available at marksimmons.co.uk and at the Bill Murray Pub Angel Comedy website. Not sure what that one is, but it's easy to find. Just Google it. That's what it's for. Cool. Wicked. I think that's it. I mean, I miss Joel this week. I don't know if you guys miss Joel. Tweet in if you miss Joel. And he'll be back next week, I'm sure. And all's left to say is thanks so much for tuning in and hashtag Awooga.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.